Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. I just opened up the program with an excerpt of a piece called Stream and Sun at Glendalough by Denise Ondishko. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. This is the first show of 2024, which is really, really exciting. And I want to also announce that we now have a Patreon page. So you can go to patreon.com/relevanttones and support us for $5 a month. Not too much for you, but it really, really does add up for us and helps us to keep this program going. We have two new hosts this year, Lisa Dell and Neve Yan. Really, really excited to welcome them to the Relevant Tones family and look forward to the shows that they make as well. And just hope that you'll support the great work that we're doing to bring contemporary music to a wider audience. And again, that is patreon.com/relevanttones. And now on with the show. I was in Dublin last year in April for the Dublin New Music Festival, and I met saxophonist Robert Finnegan, and he told me about this project called Paris Chapters, and I'm really, really taken by it. So this features Robert Finnegan on saxophone, also French singer Clara Barbier Serrano, and British-born Chinese pianist Tia Ling. And the idea was pretty much an idea between Robert and Clara, which was to feature Irish writers who spent time in France, in Paris specifically, and to commission composers to write musical settings of the pieces that they wrote while they were in Paris. A really cool project, and I got to speak with both Robert and Clara about it and have all of the music for you. So let's jump right into that interview with Robert Finnegan and Clara Barbier Serrano.
Well, we met both in London. We lived in the same student halls, actually, in the center of London, when we were both studying at the Royal College of Music. And we just happened to be in kind of similar friend groups. And we worked on a friend's opera she wrote during COVID. So we had a kind of very strange version of an opera where we planned everything on a Zoom, much like this. It's kind of getting flashbacks of it now. And everything was planned on that. And then when we had any sort of freedom to perform it, we just did it with all the regulations. And it was for a soprano singer, soprano saxophone. Then there was a, what was the other voice type, Clara? Tenor.
A baritone.
Baritone, sorry. So baritone, and then a cellist and a pianist. And that was the whole thing. And we worked on the text, we worked on the kind of movements and choreography around it with the composer and with the librettist as well. And so Clara's character was the Robin, and out of all the instruments, the soprano saxophone kind of suited the kind of bird-like nature of it the best. And we had to improvise quite a lot in this score, and we found that we improvised really, it felt really nice improvising with each other and just kind of really natural, and we could match each other's sounds, which is a very strange feeling, I think. Well, for me especially, the first time of hearing it, of a soprano singer and a soprano sax, and they link up so so exacting sometimes. And there's the vibrato, you can kind of link up vibratos, but the timbre is very, very similar. And it was a really kind of, it's nearly like when jazz players talk about being in the pocket, it's kind of, that's what it felt like in terms of the sound world that we were occupying together. So after that, I remember sending Clara a text and just being like, we need to do something together. We need to do, I don't know what, but we need to do something together. And that was, yeah, during kind of COVID and everything, which seems, again, so long ago. During COVID, I was really interested I got very in-depth in Irish literature, especially James Joyce and Samuel Beckett, and that whole connection of, like, their lives, really. Their whole lives, see, mostly in Dublin and Paris. And immediately, obviously, with Clara being French and not from Paris, but from Montpellier, there was an immediate connection of Ireland and France that just kind of fell in my lap, really, of like, here's Irish writers who lived and worked for a lot of their life in Paris, and I'm an Irish saxophonist and Clara's a French singer, so we can both get the music in, we can get the words in, we can get all of these connections, and from there we kind of started working on it. Really,
that's exactly right. And I think we were friends enough that we knew that we were both really interesting in literature. And I guess it's, I mean, for you at that time, it was really specific on these authors. For me, I work a lot with poetry anyway. I'm really interested in learning art songs and working as much on the text as I work in the music. So I guess when you had this idea, it made sense also for me to create this program and to be the singing voice of it.
Yeah, I love that. And then so you decided that it's going to be Irish writers who spent some time in Paris. That's, I mean, you know, already just an enormous, you know,
huge.
There's so much to choose from. And then, so did you let the composers choose their own texts and writers, or did you narrow it down? How did you go about actually, you know, making music out of this?
So originally it was four main writers. So it was Joyce, Beckett, Wilde, and Yeats. So they were the kind of the people that we had. I had just gotten some funding from the Irish Arts Council, and I had figured out that I could get four pieces, and there were four authors. And I didn't say to everyone like, oh, could you choose, like, can you do Joyce and can you do Beckett? And I didn't want to force people, because especially with this literature, it's like, oh, can you do a piece about Ulysses? Like, most people will run away because it's such a massive topic. But it just worked out really well that we had one composer from each to go with each author, and they picked their own. They picked their own text, they picked their own sections of the text, and their ideas around it. Also, we tried to pick the composers quite cleverly. So we had two Irish composers. We had Rona Clark and Ken Edge. We had and a French composer based in Paris. I think she's from Paris, Lise Borel. And she, yeah. She's definitely based in Paris at the minute and from the Paris. And then we had an American composer as well, Denise Ondishko, who I've worked with quite a bit, and she worked with my old teacher as well. She's an incredible composer, writes a lot for saxophone electronics. Yeah, they all just picked their own texts, and it worked out really nicely. Nice.
Although actually, Lise, in the case of Lise Borel, I think it was her own choice to write for saxophone and voice without piano. And she also picked the text, which is in English. Interestingly, because we had thought she might write something in French, but she didn't. And I think also for her, she immediately came up with a really specific idea, and it fitted really well.
Yeah, let's talk about each of the pieces. So let's start with Siren Song. If you can just talk about what you know about that specific chapter, and then, you know, describe the music for our audience.
Yeah, cool.
Robert, don't talk for 40 minutes.
I won't. This is my kind of, yeah, I've been told off.
But you do explain it much better than
yeah.
I do.
I get really nerdy about all this kind of stuff, and it becomes uninteresting after a while. No. I love it, but it kind of does get very rambly and very Ulysses-like. But yeah, basically, this piece comes from the Sirens chapter, the 11th chapter of Joyce's Ulysses, which is the most musical of all of the chapters anyway. Like, he's built in all of these sounds, all of these noises of Dublin, and of being in a pub, being in on the street. And I think that it was really clever for Rona to pick this this chapter, but also it's she doesn't fall down any sort of cliche roots of, oh, it says clang here, I'm gonna like make a clang sound. It's all really clever and kind of nearly dreamlike, and sometimes when the characters are imagining what's happening in other parts of Dublin, like there's the whole section of it where Blazes Boylan is going off to basically have an affair with Bloom's wife, and Bloom is kind of thinking all of this, and while he's writing a note to his lover, so there's all of these thoughts going on, but all of the noises are surrounding it as well. So I think it's really that kind of comes across for me in Rona's writing. Yeah, and it's this alluring nature of the music and obviously the sirens in Homer's Odyssey, of sirens luring in people. This kind of comes across, it's this kind of sensual, alluring nature of this music. It's a great mix of noises and sounds and the life and imagination of Dublin. And I think Rona portrays that really well.
Thank you. And Clara, from your perspective, how is singing that text? Talk about the piece from your perspective a little bit.
There were many different techniques used, that there was Sprechgesang and whispering and singing, but in different parts. And that this was, I think, a wonderful way to portray this text. I mean, I say poetry, it is actually nearly poetry. And that it's exciting as a singer to have a mix of these things and to have the sensuality of sometimes just speaking, but also really nice lines in between. So I think she, for me, it's a really beautiful piece, as in my inner feeling when I sing it is really pleasant and exciting.
I love it. Can we talk about the piece by Lise Borel?
Yeah, I can start. So yeah, it's Le Jardin des Tuileries, on a Oscar Wilde poem that's actually, I believe, a bit more nostalgic, and because it's a picture of the Jardin des Tuileries, this garden in the winter. And Lise made it into a really playful piece. There are five stanzas to the poem, and she really made five parts in the piece that have very specific names of very specific happenings in the poem. So it's very, in a way, it's easy to follow. I don't, maybe after I can look for all the names of the five parts, but I'm not sure I can say them like this. I make mistakes for sure. Or you help me,
Rob. I'll have a look while you're talking.
Okay, yeah. And at the end, there's sort of a little construction of all the five parts together. So there's a slower one, a faster one, a more rhythmical one, all of them very playful, both in the way it's written and also in the way Rob and I have to play together. It's really, she said she kind of was reminded of those games that you play as children who study music. I don't know if you, I mean, I definitely had these moments of let's invent a sentence and then invent a note for each syllable and then do them from the start to the end and then from the end to the start and try to play games with sounds and words. And I think this idea is present throughout her piece. There is a also very a bit more melancholic part.
I have the names of the parts, if that's any use.
Yeah.
So there's the first picture, which is the air. The second picture is the soldiers. Third picture, the paper navies. The fourth picture, the trees. And the fifth picture is spring.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's talk about Denise's piece on the Yeats poem.
Yeah, so the this is another kind of interesting coincidence of a story that, as I said earlier, we spoke quite a lot about. We decided, yes, Yeats. I really wanted to have something from Yeats. Like, Yeats is someone that, like, I studied a lot in school, kind of growing up. It's one of the writers that you just learn about. You have to study and to pass exams and stuff. You have to learn about all of his themes and all of this kind of stuff. But my brother was also a huge fan, and he also had this book of just Yeats poems that I, when I moved away, I stole actually from him. He is a few years older than me and has lived in all over Europe and is now in Canada. But when he moved out, when I was young, I got his room and took all of his books. And then when I moved to London a few years ago, I took some of them as well. And that included this little book of Yeats. And my dad had signed in the front, Ken Finnegan, such and such a date. And in quotation marks, he had trying. He really wanted to be part of the thing that that me and my brother are really into. But then I stole it and it's in my room now. But yeah, in terms of this piece, I was speaking to Denise and I told her about this book and she said, sit and read a few of them and go through them and pick one. And I was going through it and I came across this one, Stream and Sun at Glendalough. And I'd never heard of it before. I'd never even seen it in the book before. And only a few weeks before that, I'd visited Glendalough in Ireland. So I don't know if you've been to Glendalough, Seth. So it's beautiful. It's in the mountains. Not too far out of Dublin. You can get buses out there and kind of spend a day out there. But it's a huge lake in the valleys of of the mountains, effectively. And only a few weeks before I found this poem, I was there with my parents for the first time, just after Christmas. And as soon as I saw that there was a Yeats poem based on it, I thought that's immediately. Before even reading it, I thought that it needs to be that one. It's kind of meant to be nearly. And I sent it to Denise and told her the story, sent her some pictures of things that I had sent. It's also useful that my dad's a photographer, so the pictures were good. But yeah, and then an interesting thing that Denise actually thought of was for me to read the poem and send her my recording of it. And because she wanted to take the Irish inflection of how we talk and how we read this poem. A few friends of mine from different parts of Ireland also read it, and I sent them to Denise as well. And she used mostly my reading to form the melody lines. So if you listen in the track, it goes da 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 dee da 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 dum, which is how I read the first few lines of the poem. She worked it out. She'd spent a lot of time sitting at the piano, playing notes and trying to match it with the way I had read it, which is such an interesting way of composing the piece. And then she fit everything around that, and basically all of the melodies came from just the inflections in the way I read it, and she built this whole idea around it. Yeah, and it's quite a magical piece. It has something about it that it kind of seems like the most accessible, like simple piece, simple in the best kind of way. But I'm still, there's something about it that I've not really cracked, that I don't know why I like it, but there's something kind of magical about it, which kind of links to Glendalough and this poem as well, which is kind of funny.
Thank you.
the last piece is Kenneth Edge, his piece called I of Whom I Know Nothing, which is based on Beckett's Unnameable, which was originally written in French, like a lot of Beckett's works. And this is part of the post-war trilogy of Malone Dies and The Unnameable. And again, this was one that Ken just picked, and he said, this is what I'm doing. I kind of heard through the grapevine that he was interested in this kind of literature. And he's written this incredible piece that incorporates some of the text. So it's in five sections. And at the start of each section, he writes in for me to read a bit of the text. And it's highly virtuosic, highly kind of contrasting in emotions. Sometimes it's just completely comical and kind of mad. And then it goes into this anger and very dark place in the mind, which kind of mirrors a lot of Beckett's writing, where it's all kind of jokey and happy. And then it goes into death, like, which is a big theme in Beckett, and the end of everything and the passing of time. And it's very heavy stuff. So I think it comes across really well. It's a piece that, as part of the program, I'm always a bit worried about. Worried because it's hard to play, but also worried that it'll come across. But people always really enjoy it. And I'm really glad, because it's one of my favorite pieces that
people always...
Sorry?
Yeah, I said the audience always enjoys this piece. It's really, it's beautifully written, that it's very, very, without being an easy piece, it's very catchy in a way. Because the things come back, the sort of motives come back, and it's very cool to listen to. I think it always works really well in the concert. It's a really exciting moment.
Part one. So, heart too, were I not devoid of feeling.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have today for the program, but I hope that you enjoyed it. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. On behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.